If you travel, you know how to really go off the grid. Like no cell service in your room off the grid. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths, sound baths, and ice baths. Because when you set up your out of office, you mean it. Because when you're the escape artist, vacation is all about resting, meditating, drinking water, and minding your own businessing. The Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know. Learn more at go.amex/you know.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I Am Athlete Parlay is killing it this year.
These are guaranteed wins.
I'm going to take Arizona over San Fran.
Whoa.
Daniel Jones over Patrick Mahomes at home?
Here are the three teams. We have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Atlanta. Who's going to get it done? Tom Brady's going to get it done. I'm telling you, like, I'm not betting against the Colts. You got the Arizona Cardinals. My old team, my ex, the Chicago Bears, the Cardinals, man. I'm telling you right now, the Arizona Cardinals, man, Murray getting healthy. This is the year, so I'm going to go with the Cardinals right now. So the last game, I'm going to go with Jacksonville at the Rams. The Rams, the chemistry continuity, is it really going to mesh this week? Jacksonville, now I know there's some games where Jacksonville's in it. And I know there's some games where it's like, oh, who's this Jacksonville team? But it's the Rams, so we're going to go with the Rams. Those are the three teams. So we got Tampa Bay, we got Arizona, and we got the Los Angeles Rams. That is the Week 13 I Am Athlete NFL Parlay. DraftKings.com is the sports book. I Am Athlete is the platform. Parlay, I Am Athlete all day. Promo code ATHLETE. Let's get it.
Five minutes ago, I was upstairs on the second floor here at NASCAR's headquarters, and I see this poster. What's the Wendell Scott race story?
It's a combination of what happened on that particular day and that particular race in Jacksonville, December 1st, 1963, when he won the race down there. It's a combination of a race, but also a race, his race. Mm. You see what I'm saying? So, my man right here, I was listening to the night. My father was an athlete. Okay.
First time I ever heard Wendell Scott was Grease Lightning.
Yeah.
Richard Pryor. Yeah, I thought it was a comedy, and I started watching. I was like, yeah, this ain't no comedy. It's Richard.
Yeah.
Y'all do a lot for your father, your grandfather. What, like, when other people try with Grease Lightning, did they do a good job?
They did a good job, but they wanted to create a movie that was a cross-sectional movie. You know, they wanted to get whites and blacks in the theater. So that was one of the concepts that they had about that particular Grease Lightning story. And my dad would say, like, man, I wish they hadn't cut that out, you know, because he was they cut the nightclub scenes out, they cut the, you know, yeah. I mean,
what was tell us about those scenes. Like, what was the scenes they cut out? Tell us. when we gonna get that? We want to hear those stories. That's why we got y'all on the show.
My father, man, he was a player. I mean, he hit all the scenes, you know. And so they cut some of those scenes out.
Right.
The movie started out with Melvin Van Peebles as the director. And he actually came to Danville. And I was coaching at the time. And Daddy brought him out to the school. And he wanted to go all the way wild with it. And Warner Brothers, they didn't want to do that. So then they kind of worked out an agreement that he left the set. And then Hannah Weinstein, they made her the director, so.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that says a lot. I mean, you guys are, you know, holding it down right now and pushing a legacy forward, you know, making sure that we all remember and never, and for some, never forget, right? Do you feel like the story, has it been completely told the right way yet?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. There's so much of the Wendell Scott story that has not been told, and that's what we're going to do.
Right.
In conjunction with the projects that we have going, we're gonna tell the whole story.
Right.
Let me say something to you, though, man. You made me think about a quote my daddy used to use. And my father said, look, just because I lose a race, it don't mean I'm defeated.
Mm.
So when you get in the boxing ring, if you happen to decision don't go against you, that don't mean you're defeated.
Mm. Did you watch his first fight?
No, I haven't seen him fight.
Chan, can you give him a recap of the first fight?
I'm trying to understand how the recap of the first fight would be bad anyway, but go ahead.
You.
You look good. You look phenomenal.
You were moving great. Well, but there was a point. It was quick. Your booty was in the air.
No, it wasn't.
Ocho.
Sir, I was down maybe 0.2 seconds.
Quick.
And got up.
You got up quick.
It's boxing. It's like they don't understand in boxing, you go down.
You got to have one or the other.
Right.
That's what it is.
I don't think they understand the dynamic of actually getting in the ring.
Yeah.
No amateur experience on pay-per-view.
Right.
In front of the world.
Right.
In front of fans.
Right.
For your first ever fight and actually doing it against somebody that does it for a profession. Like, that takes cojones.
I would tend to agree.
I wanted to be a boxer.
Tell them about the fight at the garage. Tell them about the big fight at the garage, the boxing match inside the garage.
Okay. One of the gentlemen who was with my father at the Jacksonville race, his name was Dick Cheney. They called him the Wild Horse. He was about 6'4", about 270, 280. We had another guy in the community who was a professional boxer. His name was Ernest McLaughlin. So everybody hanging around the garage all the time, you know. People worked at Dan River Mills, they got off, they come there. And back of the factory, they come there. You know, it was like community center. So we had a little agitator in the garage that night, and he said, Wild Horse, you think you can beat Mac? And Wild Horse used to call everybody Billy Boy.
Billy Boy.
Yeah, Billy Boy. Anyway, I hit you, I break a bone. You throw your arm, block him, I'll break your arm. So anyway, my father had gone up to the community store, and so they were going to box, right? And I ran, I said, Dad, that's a Wild Horse, and Mac getting ready to box, fight. He said, what? He said, he came in there, so they won't do it. So set some rules up. So we cleaned the floor off. We cleaned the floor, moved tools, moved stuff back. Gonna fight 3 1-minute rounds. They put up, they had $49 between the two of them. That thing was Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve now. Christmas Eve.
Right. So then they're gonna be the referee, right? So the boxing match started. And boy, I tell you, Wild Horse was hitting Mac, and his feet was coming above the ground. But Mac, professional boxer, see? You know, he kept on aiming for Wild Horse chest and kept hitting him under the heart. So then he hit him under the heart, and he faked and came around and caught him with a left hook and set Wild Horse on the floor. I'll have to admit, though, they had a few drinks.
Yeah.
Not Mac, but Wild Horse and his buddy, Bro Robinson, who was also with Daddy at Jacksonville that day. That was his sidekick, right? So he's sitting on the floor, and when Mac said, count that man out, Scott. Daddy said, one, get up, Wild Horse. Two, get up, Wild Horse. And man, it went there and was accounting for 10 minutes. Anyway, that was that scene, but he didn't get up.
He didn't get up.
He didn't get up. But you know, I want to say this, that, you know, the legacy of my father, you know, we're related to Muhammad Ali. My father's mother and Muhammad Ali's mother, they were like first cousins.
So did they have a relationship?
Some of the family members tried to talk to Muhammad Ali about, you know, sponsoring daddy and everything. And his thing was, the last thing I heard was, if anything, that's a dangerous sport. If something happened to him, I would feel guilty. So he never would give us any money.
Wow. So now you have Muhammad Ali, Wendell Scott. We're talking about two kings, two black men, the first in a lot of things. What do you think came with being the first in NASCAR and Muhammad Ali to do be the first of many things?
Yeah.
What did they have to carry?
Oh, man, the weight that my father carried. I listened to you guys, even with Bubba. And I think that he's one of the vanguards of the sport, man. He raced on the old Daytona Beach course in 54, 55, 56, 57, and 58. The only black man when they had 75, 80, 90 cars in the race. Mm. They thought they didn't know he was black at first, you know, because he was like light-skinned. He thought he was just a greasy white man, you know. and then after he got his license, of course, but his first race, they didn't want to give his name because he was killing them in North Carolina and Virginia in the modified and sportsman division and everything. So they when he came first came his first race in Spartanburg, he was listed as W.D. Scott because if they said Wendell Scott, they go, somebody would have known. Wow. Hey, that's that black guy that's killing them up in Virginia and North Carolina.
Wow.
So, you know.
Yo, this is Brandon Marshall here to talk to you about some of my favorite things to eat. The carb fear is real, but carb-heavy foods are often the ones we love the most. Hero Bread makes those same delicious favorites free of consequences or compromises. They've remade carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. The soft, fluffy experience you love when enjoying a refreshing BLT. Savory breakfast burrito or mouth-watering cheeseburger. Something for every craving, including sliced bread, loaves, buns, and tortillas. And they have monthly small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the 2 gram net zero hero croissant or the 1 gram net carb hero cheddar biscuit. Don't give up being a bread head. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code athlete at checkout. That's athlete at hero, hero.co.
The legacy he has, we everybody knows that name, everybody knows what he did. What about y'all? Like Wendell Scott's son, Wendell Scott's grandson, like do you wanna be like, you know what I'm saying, step out of that, or do you have that, is it pressure on y'all too?
I don't ever get tired of it. I let my son speak on it because he likes talk more than me.
But is it pressure to be to
it's not pressure. Lineage? It's not pressure because my father is a successful he doesn't talk about it enough, but he's a Virginia basketball coach and legend. He's a legend in high school basketball. And so I played for my dad. And so I sat in the stands with my grandfather as a young kid, hearing people hating on my dad, you know, especially the rival school, saying all types of terrible stuff about him and our family and stuff like that. And so I grew up in a pressure cooker. Hmm. You know what I mean? And so my life's work became the pursuit of liberating my grandfather's legacy, primarily. You know, everything I'd ever done always angled back towards community of kids. And I've done a lot, you know, in my life. But as far as my dad, like my dad said, no, I totally embrace who we are and where we are. I feel like it's a responsibility.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Because I can tell you that Wendell Scott's legacy, maybe we should do a social media poll, right? This would be a cool social experiment. Wendell Scott's legacy has saved people's lives time and time again throughout the years. Facebook inbox messages we get, DMs we get, emails, letters, people drive from all across the country just to come to our garage or to meet our family. If you ever done some real stuff, which we all have done some real stuff, when you make it out of something, then you begin to get a little more grateful for the space you hold on earth, right? And so me, I've done some real stuff. You know what I mean? And so I figured to be spared or to still be here, what could be better for me than to try to use my grandfather's legacy to just broker strong relationships? You know, young black kids, they don't have anybody broker for them. You know, like, so with the Wendell Scott Foundation, what we say is when we are sending a kid to a college or we're speaking to a principal, we're going in to advocate and broker for the kid. Mm. We want to know what dorm they're staying in. Is it the best dorm? We want to know what kind of work-study opportunity they're going to have. We know we want to know the things that you would want to know about your own children.
Wow.
Well, that's who Wendell Scott was. For lack of a better explanation, he was kind of like Bumpy Johnson with the moonshine.
Right.
Leading into that, right? That's what led him into NASCAR. But you know those type of figures hold a big space in the community. right? Christmas time, mm-hmm. need some money, Thanksgiving. Wendell Scott, he had a built-in fan base before he ever really hit the big time. He was so acclimated to oppressive circumstances that he was able to perform highly in them circumstances. And so that's how over time he won over the affections of Caucasian America. You know what I mean? In the beginning, you know, everybody done loved Wendell. That's documented.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about Kevin Harvick and Chase Elliott
yeah.
in the NASCAR beef.
Right.
Greatest NASCAR beef of all time, Wendell Scott. Wendell Scott and Jack Smith.
You think?
To what other NASCAR driver pulled out a yapper?
What's a yapper? Like now you so yeah. It's a
yapper. They kind of helped me out over there.
Yeah, I know, but the people watching, everybody don't know what a yapper is. Yeah.
All right, let me tell you about that.
Just remember yapper.
Yeah.
Spell it.
Yeah, I know.
Pull out the yapper.
I know.
Okay, let me tell you about it. In the second year, my father in Cup, Grand National, he set a half mile dirt track record in Savannah, Georgia. First man to ever run a half mile dirt track under 26 seconds. So in the driver's meeting, we meet on the track for the meeting, you know, they gave it to him. He didn't really go that fast, right? Jack Smith walked up today, said, when they dropped the green flag, said, I got five of these MF, and this one right here, I'm gonna run it clean through that raggedy ass Chevrolet of yours. So Daddy said, well, Jack, if you pass me on the outside. So he got into a thing where he was bumping our car and wrecking my father and whatever. So my father got tired of it. And my father didn't allow us to carry weapons to the track because he knew we couldn't win. I mean, it's four or five of us, 20,000 people. But on this particular night in Valdosta, Georgia, Jack Smith pulled up beside my father and pointed his finger and said, I'm gonna get you again tonight. And Dad had the pistol and he said, yeah, I'm gonna get you.
Yopper.
Yopper. He said yopper.
Yopper.
He had the pistol in his car with him.
Greatest NASCAR beef of all time.
Yeah. If you see one of the docudramas we did, you'll see that they actually showed that. And you know what? He didn't bother us no more.
No more.
He slapped on brakes. We didn't have no more problem out of him.
Wow.
Yopper.
You know what my father said? I got sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Mm.
I mean, now I know why you used the word, because I wanted to come back to you.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy, we got to push the conversation forward because of what you just said. But you intentionally use liberate,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm like, why do you choose that word?
Because of the time period in between my grandfather's career and the present day evolution of not just Bubba in the sport, but minorities as well. You know, working behind the scenes with NASCAR, I know there are many African-Americans in the sport that are doing some great stuff. You know, behind the scenes in different departments, different divisions or whatever.
Absolutely.
Right? But when you think about Wendell Scott, you think about just the, you know, him as a NASCAR driver. We hear Jacksonville. We hear about March 4th. Mm-hmm. We don't really take time to digest 147 top 10 finishes. Right? We don't take time to digest 495 career starts. We don't take time to digest where they slept at in the middle of the civil rights movement, traveling.
Picnic ground, boy.
Traveling across the country.
Picnic table.
We don't talk about that, right? We were in Daytona, and I said, Daddy, I said, where did y'all stay? So my grandfather's race car, it's a sponsor logo. The most famous race car he has, the Scott Blue Chevy that he won the Jacksonville in. It has Royal Beach Hotel on it.
Right.
And so I'm looking at the car and I'm saying, well, if he never had a sponsor, then why is Royal Beach Hotel even on the car? But he bought the car from another NASCAR driver who was sponsored. And when Daddy repainted the car, Papa told him to leave the Royal Beach Hotel on the car with hopes that someone would say, well, I guess they sponsoring black people now, right? Yeah. So maybe this will help trap somebody into sponsoring again. It's those type of things that he experienced that nobody else in the sport ever had to experience. I don't know of any other driver in NASCAR history who had to worry about
when they left their home if they would die on the way to or from. I don't know of any other NASCAR driver. I read an article on my granddad in 1986. In the interview, the journalist asked my granddad, was he ever scared, you know, going to these different places? And he always said that the one place that he felt most fearful is where he started, which was South Carolina. But the way he said that he was scared that he would die was from a sniper.
Oh, man.
That's what was in his mind. It wasn't the super speedways. It wasn't the Ku Klux Klan or any of that. It was somebody perched up in a tree, hitting them from long range, because at that time, that's how our leaders were dying.
Wow.
Makes perfect sense.
You know, we were in Birmingham, Alabama, and that was 2 months after Martin Luther King was in Birmingham jail, racing at the fairgrounds. After the race, one of the NASCAR stewards came and said, Frank, said, where's your father? I said, he went to get paid off. He said, man, go get him. He said, y'all got to get out of here. You got a death threat. We got to, you know, he said, y'all need to get out of here. He said, tell him we'll mail him his check, you know. So I went and told Daddy, what, you know, he said, man, I ain't, you know. I said, no, Dad, let's go. So he said, they had a place they were going to block us off and burn this, you know, we had the truck with the race up on top of it and going to burn our racing down and whatever. So the guy told us the way to go. He said, don't go that way. He said, it's going to put you out of the way. So you're going to probably have to go about 50, 60, 70 miles out of the way, go towards Memphis, I think I heard him say. And that's what we did. So we dealt with some things like that. My father experienced, we're racing Dover, Delaware, went in the race up there. And at that time, they let the fans actually come to in the pits. So someone offered my father what he thought was a cold cup of orange juice. But it was a Mickey.
Oh, wow.
And my father never drank or smoked. He hollered a little liquor, though. Mm. But he never
drank. You think he did? That's how you maximize the profit.
Right. From Maryland to...
Can't dip into the...
Yeah,
can't
dip from Maryland to North Carolina, Charlotte, anyway. But anyway, that drink was a Mickey. And for 36 hours, man, my father, I had to hold him down. He didn't even know where he was or who he was. It was a powerful stuff, but his constitution was so strong. That's why I think he didn't die. So from that point on, for our family, if you didn't crack the top on it or come from the family, we didn't consume anything. We realized that, you know, that there are people out there that wanted to hurt you.
You guys really are like NASCAR royalty, mm-hmm. like truly. And I don't know if you guys feel that way. I know you guys were just honored, but like, man, just sitting back and hearing you guys tell these stories, I mean, this is an honor. It's a blessing. We're talking about, you know, your father, your grandfather, but Pops, you've been through a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, thinking about it, you're saying I'm at the racetrack. You're a kid talking about I'm my dad's bodyguard.
He's a kid. He's working on the racing team due to my grandfather's own admission. This is in documentaries. He's at the garage. My grandfather said that I had my boys up at the garage way earlier than they ever should have been. What you saying, 7, 8 years old.
So you could get a NASCAR license, a minor's release license at 16. When I was 14, I had a minor's release license. We falsified my age. My brother's age too, he was able to get a minor's release license. Then when we were old enough to get the regular license, they said, well, y'all been lying about your age all this time, you know? But he needed us. And I had a little mustache and I looked, you know, older than I was.
Yeah, but how do you go through everything you've gone through mm-hmm. and your heart's not hardened?
Well, because of my father. He was unapologetic. But he didn't let it, you know. It was a thorn. He dealt with it. He dealt with the adversity. He couldn't. I did a thing, well, I'm not going to call it a station, but I did a thing on Confederate flag even before Bubba did it. That's when Jeff Gordon and Dale Jr. had come out a week or so early and saying that they wanted it away from the track, even before Bubba mentioned it. And I mentioned that. And he said, well, how'd you, I said, well, we were taught, we were busy. We ignored it.
Right, that's like what my uncle got me in the sport. That's what he said, he's been in it since
We just ignored it. I mean, you know, we had a job, and we were trying to survive.
Right.
we were counting every penny and trying to, you know, and you know, Dad said, well, you know, how should, because a lot of times he could have finished, he finished in the top 10, 25% of his races. He finished 70% of his races that he started. And a lot of times he could have finished high up, but we on the road, back then you got 3 races a week. You may start in Murrayville, Tennessee, you go to Chattanooga, and you go to Nashville. Now, if you turn your car, blow your motor, or mess your car up, you know, you back at home. So a lot of times he had to, it was a business decision a lot of times we made, you know. We decided, my brother and I, my father, we would decide how we were going to attack every race, you know, who we were going to outrun. A lot of times he could outrun some people, they didn't, because he didn't want to abuse his equipment.
So if you ask about, like, what he's gone through, you race an entire NASCAR career, and every dollar you earn goes back into the racing operation or to the house. 7 kids. He's got children during his racing career that are entering college and stuff like that. And so if you ask me how I avoided the bitter bug, I would tell you that that wouldn't be true. I have not always been the calm serenity guy that I am.
Yeah, because you talking about yoppers and stuff. Yeah. So yeah,
my point is that the hatred spirit piece, it just never circulated through our family. That was never really a thing that we harped on, was the negative part. But now, priding myself on being an intelligent black man, being raised by an intelligent black man, what happened for me was a lot of this stuff, as I tried to articulate who we are and what we are, the stuff was making me look unintelligent. It wasn't adding up. And so I'm not willing to be unintelligent or be perceived to be unintelligent by anything or anyone. And so that's what kind of led to us beginning to kind of crank the foundation up, but also look for ways to rebrand Wendell Scott's legacy and tell our whole full story. When somebody will look at Wendell Scott, we get a lot of pat on the back love because they think he was only the guy that won the one race. They don't know he won 128 races prior to entering the sport, right? They don't look at the success he had as a team owner. We're talking about a team owner. We're talking about a team owner who had white guys drive for him.
Yeah.
It's a whole big piece to it, you know, that for me, if I don't tell that story, then I begin to look unintelligent. I begin to look like, hey, man, we're just this one-dimensional component. And, you know, this is a multidimensional enterprise. The cataclysmic effect of not attaining sponsorship throughout his NASCAR career, that's what trickled down from generation to generation.
But that can go into a whole nother conversation, because we talk about having access and creating generational wealth and we talk about equality in this country. So that could be a whole nother conversation.
So if somebody asked me, so you got the trophy, the Jacksonville trophy, the Daytona trophy, I've had people ask me what was the big deal about it.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's not even malicious. It's just they really want to know. So you're talking about generational wealth. One thing about it is that trophy is a part of our worth.
Yeah.
It's an artifact. I tell you what, quick pop quiz. Name the first African-American to win a NASCAR race. It's Wendell Scott. It's every time. The answer going to be Wendell Scott every time. So that trophy is the first of his kind.
Right.
Mm. That's one of one, right?
Yeah.
Number four, none.
And you had to fight to get that.
And the point, not to cut across Warwick, but there were 2,000.
Pops, you like me.
There were 2,000.
You cut everybody off.
Yeah, well, I know. I heard you say you were messy.
Yeah, yeah.
You said you were messy, then you said I'm messy. I got you. I'm on you. I'm messy. It's important. But a couple of things about my father, I got to put this out there. My father was a great humanitarian, man. We'd be on those bumpy, narrow swamps on the side, roads down in Alabama and Georgia. Somebody would be walking, he'd stop and pick them up. We brought more hitchhikers slept in our bathtub. That was a bed. He'd bring them to Denver. You know, I slept in our cars at the garage and the thing about my father, he would teach them basic skills, mechanical skills, which, you know, back then you could teach basic skills.
That's right.
Everything.
Yeah, computer, that's right. Yeah,
you
right.
know, changing oil, brake shoes, whatever. He'd always put them in a car whenever some of them would stay 2 years. He'd teach me, and he'd always make sure they had a driver, legal driver's license. And send them, you know, when they went on their way, they would left their driver in a car. One Christmas, this lady came to the garage, and she had some relatives coming to town. She said, I was wondering if I could borrow a few dollars from you. I don't have nothing, you know. So Daddy went in. Daddy's dollar bills were always greasy. And he gave her money, money he had, and his change, and gave it to her. He said, buy what you need. So I'm like, damn, Dad, that's all you had, man. So I said, Dad, was that all you had? He said, yeah, but see, I can make some more, she can't.
Wow.
You know.
Speaking of money, y'all said generational wealth. I don't know if this is messy, but history, you can't eat history. Right. Respect, you know, it can eat respect. Facts. You know what I'm saying? That's like, is I don't want to say lucrative, but can y'all, is it well monetized? The Wendell Scott legacy. I don't even give me a number, but you know what I'm saying?
That's the missing part.
Yeah.
No.
That's one of the main missing parts.
My father, a school teacher, man. My parents school teachers. You know how much teachers make. Mm. Most successful man I ever knew was between him and my granddad. So I tell people all the time, I don't even know the money part of it, whatever that is. I don't even really know what it is. Because the way we came up, you know, we was just always grateful for the little things.
Hold on, time out. Let me take my seat back and cut y'all off. Mm-hmm. That's what I do on this show.
Okay, you the boss.
Right. My dream, all right, 3 years from now, I Am Athlete NASCAR. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to help NASCAR reach new audiences. I want our community to get behind this sport and to get behind you guys, to get behind Bubba, to get behind Raj, to get behind all the minorities in this sport. This sport is phenomenal.
It is.
And my goal, you know, 2, 3, 4 years from now, is for brands to say, you know what, we need to get behind you guys and tell y'all story. We need to get behind y'all foundations.
Right.
Y'all NASCAR royalty. Now, there's so many amazing people, men, women, black, white, in this sport. But that's my job, and I feel that responsibility. I ain't gonna cry on this show, you know.
But you can. It's your show.
But because when we talk about generational wealth and we talk about access, we talk about equality, it's not just about y'all. You talking about I'm going to schools and I'm brokering for these kids. That's what matters. How we change our community.
But that's Wendell right there. See, so what's happening? You can't have a meaningful conversation about my grandfather and not be moved to tears. Because as much as you think you know, you really don't know. So that's an authentic feeling. You would not be by yourself.
But here's the thing, let's keep it real. Let's just keep it real. This is an amazing opportunity for I Am Athlete NASCAR. Why? Because there's five black men sitting here talking about NASCAR. Y'all, this is y'all culture. This is what y'all, this ain't part of our culture.
Right.
We're learning. We like it.
Right.
We're growing to love it.
Right.
Right?
Right.
In football, we get paid. We make $10 billion a year. We get paid off of TV rights. Like, a lot of the money come from that. Mm-hmm. New audiences. It's important as a businessman. Businessman. You guys are businessmen.
Absolutely.
We got to continue to push the sport forward. If we do that, right, there's more for everybody.
Right.
And so, the more of us that come into the sport, it's awesome. We get to enjoy it. We're going to be in the stands. We're going to, I love Kyle Busch.
Right.
That's my driver. Bubba, I love Bubba. I'm behind Bubba because Bubba black.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But my driver is Kyle Busch. And he a white dude. I'm going to be honest.
Rowdy.
Right, Rowdy. That's my guy.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Rowdy is my guy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But as we continue to highlight this amazing sport and push this sport forward, we also got to be in position to be owners. We need more Michael Jordans.
Yeah.
Fact.
Right? We need more members of the pit crew that look like us. We need more Raj. I feel a responsibility to share these stories, not just with you guys, but everybody in the sport that's deserving, you know, to have a seat in a position.
Well, this is why we're so excited to be here because of the platform and how it's designed and what you all come from.
This is unique.
You know, one of the best things about Daytona for me was the way we was able to break bread with our people, like after the races.
and just chilling at the bar, just having drinks, you know, with like-minded people. Like, right. So growing up in the sport, that's an experience that I never really had.
Wow.
I'd be remiss if I didn't make this point, but the Wendell Scott Foundation is a completion of a dream that my father, a vision that my father had over 50 years ago. Back then, we raced 2 or 3 nights a week. You know, when my father was doing modified swell, he raced every night, six nights a week, and twice on Sunday. And so we were sitting in this restaurant. We found a restaurant we could eat breakfast in. Most of the places, you know, after we traveled, we couldn't want no restaurants. We want no Hardee's. We want no McDonald's.
Oh, man. He be watching.
I wish we could have got a McDonald's.
He know. Pop know.
And so my father was sitting there, and I was sitting beside him, like where Warwick is. He was just staring out. I said, Dad, come on, man. I said, we hadn't eaten anything in over 24 hours. I said, come on, food's out. Let's go eat. He said, no. He said, see those kids out there? He said, some of them don't have shoes on. Some of them don't have shirts on. There's no telling where they slept last night. He said, I'm almost positive they haven't had any breakfast. He said, if I ever become wealthy, doing what I'm doing, I'm going to build orphanage homes all over the South for kids like that, and not just black kids.
Not just black kids.
50 plus years later, Warwick's in the nightclub business in Raleigh, which my wife and I didn't want him in.
It was lit. And,
yeah, the spot.
West Side Stories.
Yeah, the spot.
And so one night he called home, about 2:30 in the morning, 2:15. And the first thing my wife said, Mabel said, what's wrong? What happened? And Warwick heard me. He said, tell Mama ain't nothing wrong. Ain't nothing wrong. So Shanique and I made a decision. We decided to move back to Danville and start the Wendell Scott Foundation.
Yeah.
He didn't know anything about
it. Yeah.
What his grandfather said over 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cut it off.
There you go. You're good, ain't it? That boy good.
Cut it off.
Oh, man.
I love it.